And you know what's funny, Gary, is the comment that you just said, right, about 3-4-3, and it's not all about soccer, right? I think in my first, I don't know, 10, 12 years of knowing you and knowing 3-4-3 and Brian and seeing everything, right? I always believed that it was, just about the game on the field, on the grass, the 22 players on the field, the tactics, the way that you possess the ball. I never, until I started working with you on the side, I never could have imagined all the stuff that was going on behind the scenes or at the top, right? And being exposed to all that, it really opens your eyes. And knowing that it's like you always say, it's more than just a game. It's way more politics, and you know what I mean? I had no idea, right? And I know you on your last podcast with Kurt, I think it was with Kurt, right? You mentioned like when you were going to the Rose Bowl and watching the Galaxy, and you were a fan, right? And you had no idea what was going on, right? And so for me, when I 5 years ago when I started working with you, and I'm editing these podcasts, and I'm hearing, absorbing all this information, it's really eye-opening. And I think a lot of American soccer fans have no idea. Maybe they hear little snippets here and there, especially if you're really new to the game. You're only gonna see the highlights, or you're only gonna see certain things. But I think if you're really deeply invested to the game, you're gonna see it, what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today I have Benjamin Rogers on the line, and this is a conversation I've wanted to have for a very, very long time. Benny is somebody I've known since he was 10 years of age, and he's now in his late 20s. I was introduced to him through one of Brian's earliest of youth teams close to 20 years ago. And he's been along for the quote-unquote 3-4-3 ride ever since. Most recently, maybe around 4 years ago or so, he's been helping out with our social media efforts, specifically on Instagram, on YouTube, through producing some videos, editing some audiograms, some podcasts, and a whole myriad of other things. So I'm very happy to have Benny on the line today, introduce him to you, because you really should know who is the man behind many of the things that we've been pumping out nowadays. Benny has played soccer his whole life and also transitioned into the coaching role many years ago. So coaches, you get to listen into another colleague and his coaching evolution, how it started, how it progressed, and where it's at now. So all right, with that, please just take a few seconds to listen to what sponsors this episode. It's our own coaching education and parent education products. We do not accept any outside sponsors because, again, guys, we're not going to be beholden to anybody. Here we go. Coaches, you want to go to 343coaching.com. Parents, you want to go to 343masterclass.com. And 7vs7 coaches, for the little ones, you want to go to 7v7coaching.com. Those are our three principal products, and I'm going to give you just a brief little taste of each of the three and why you should absolutely get on it today. So for coaches wanting on the premium program that's at 343coaching.com, this is a program that was launched in 2013. So we've been going over 10 years strong. Thousands of coaches have gone through the program. Many of those coaches are still members of the program 10 years later. Incredible stuff. Because why? Well, you get to listen in and watch one of the best practitioners ever in youth soccer here in the United States. You get to be a fly on the wall as Brian Kleiben coaches the activities, coaches his teams in the real live training environment, totally unscripted, totally unedited. You get to see the real thing, guys. And for those who might be new, Brian did unprecedented work here in the United States. If you're not too familiar, well, I guess you shouldn't join the program quite yet. You should familiarize yourself with all the 300 plus articles that are available for free for you to explore. You should go to our YouTube channel and watch a whole bunch of our match footage, some training footage, interviews, so on and so forth. There is a 7-week free course that you could be a part of before you become a premium member. That free course is also at 343coaching.com. You can listen to our 300 plus podcast episodes. So you should really get to know us first and see what it is that we've actually accomplished here in the United States before you open up your wallet. I recommend people do that for everything and anything that they do out there in the marketplace. I happen to believe it's critical that you hitch your wagon or learn from folks who have done the actual work and unprecedented work, and there's exhaustive video evidence of their unprecedented work. So that's what you can get at 343coaching.com. Parents, I'll leave the long-windedness for another day, but you really should go to 343masterclass.com. It's going to give you a whole bunch of the tools that you need to navigate this labyrinth that is the American soccer hellscape for your son or daughter. And the little ones, yes, 7v7coaching.com. All right, here we go. Enjoy the episode with Benjamin Rogers. So, Benny, we've been wanting to do this for a very long time, or rather, I should say, I've been wanting to do this for a very long time, which is get you on the mic, get you on the video in particular, because, you know, I tapped you on the shoulder many years ago to say, hey, man, this is what we're doing here at 343. We've got this thing going on. What do you think about it? You want to maybe do something with us? And you said, fuck yeah, let's do something. And it's been many years later, but more important than that, maybe about how long ago was it, Ben? Maybe a year ago or close to a year? Yeah, probably a year ago. I said, hey, can you take over our Instagram account and start doing just all our social media, because I don't want to do that stuff. And you've never said no to me. I don't know why. At some point, you got to say no to me if you don't want to do something. But, you know, we'll get there, I'm sure, at some point. And the important thing that I wanted to get you to talk about for the audience sake is I want to introduce you. Because you're the man behind the screen and the man behind a lot of the videos, the man behind a lot of the reels, the man behind the posts, just everything. And I think that's important for people to understand. So I don't know, without further ado, maybe have you ever given like a 60-second intro of yourself before? How many interviews have you done, dude? Or how many presentations at school? Or I don't know, give us the 60-second self-narrative that you always tell yourself. This is who I am, I guess.
I like it. No, and it's funny too that I'm actually here at Cal State Fullerton, because in my last semester, I was in a class called Interviewing Principles and Practices. And so we actually worked on giving our elevator pitch or that 30-second little intro about yourself. So we could start from the beginning. This is something that I was thinking about last night. I can still remember it so vividly, right? I was hanging out with my brother, Danny. I was about 10 years old. We're at home and all of a sudden the phone rings and it was the manager of Brian's Rage team. I have no idea how they got the contact info, but sure enough, they called us and they invited Danny out to training. And the next day we were out there and I tagged along and I was a little kid. And I just remember watching that first training session. I remember watching John Esham lead a fitness thing and just the intensity of Brian and his energy. It's something that really brings you in and it's something that you want to be around. And so about 3 or 4 years later, I was cut from my club team. At the time, it seemed like the biggest deal in the world, but I was cut. And funny enough, Brian happened to start a team that was in my age group as well. So that was a blessing in disguise for me. I got to play under Brian for 3 years and it honestly changed the way that I see the game, the way that I go about life and my general approach. And I feel really fortunate to have been coached by Brian and also to have been kind of mentored by you. Kind of my first memory of you, Gary, is there was like a practice session and we're doing a drill where the ball gets pinged into you, right? And the guy comes flying in and you have to shield it off. And I remember it's so funny how I remember, but you happened to be there that night and you gave me like this little piece of advice before I went, like, hey, when you go press and fake like you're going one way and then go the other way, I guarantee you'll win the ball. And sure enough, I did it. And I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? Like some guy in jeans smoking a cigarette comes up to me. And sure enough, that was my first instance of Gary Klaven. But that's how I got roped in with 343. In terms of my story, right? I've played soccer all my life. Both of my older brothers played soccer. By the time I graduated high school, funny enough, I was kind of over soccer. I wanted to do my own path. Both of my older brothers were already coaches in their own respective areas, right? Danny was coaching up north and Nick as well. I kind of wanted to create my own path. And so I stepped away from soccer after high school. But funny enough, the game always seems to like find a way to bring me back in. Back in 2016, I studied abroad in London and I got to live in Europe for 3 months. And I got to see Barcelona play at the Camp Nou. I also got to see Roma play. And in those moments, I knew when I got back home that I would have to be back in the game in some fashion, whether it be coaching or whatever it is. But I knew that I wanted to come back. And yeah, it just worked out that when I did come back, I had ran into you at Biggs. And here we are 6 years later.
That's crazy.
I know I kind of went all over the place, but that was just what came to mind for me.
No, it's crystal clear. That's so crazy, dude. The 2016, the study abroad, you were already in college there at Cal State Fullerton?
I was in college. I was at Fullerton Junior College. Amazing experience and changed my whole world perspective. Opened so many doors for me as well.
It's weird how one little micro decision or decision period can right. alter the course of your life. A while, dude. So 2016, how old were you?
2016, I was 21.
21, got it. So you're in your late 20s now, dude. You're getting old.
28, so yeah, I'm almost going to be 30.
Hard That's to leave. So wild, dude. That's so crazy.
I'd be curious to know, dude, like, what is your first memory of me, if you can even recall it?
Yeah, so let's see. Brian had that team, and to be honest, I wasn't all too interested in that team that you guys put on.
We were the Flaps compared to Brian's older team, though.
Yeah, for context for the audience, too. So the team that Benny's brother played on, older brother, how old is Danny, older than you? 5 years older than you?
6 years older than me.
6 years older than you. That team was one of Brian's original teams. It was called OSC Rage. OSC being the soccer club, Orange Soccer Club. I think it's now defunct. It was just some micro mini soccer club in Orange County. Maybe it had a total of 10 teams, you know, never had high level teams at all. And Brian took that team over. I think it was bronze, if I'm not mistaken, which was the absolute lowest tier that you could possibly be. Basically, it's like glorified rec ball is what it is. And he took that team, and there was promotion and relegation, you know, and the best soccer league in the country at the time was called Coast Soccer League, where there was pro rel. And Brian won the league, got promoted to Dover, won the league again the following year, once Dover got promoted to Dover League, then won it again, got promoted to gold, won it again, got to the Premier League. And in the Premier League, it's the best teams in the country, basically, here out of Southern California. The national champion always came out of the Premier League. And so that through that whole process, and yes, there was some turnover, you know, every season, you know, four players would leave or get cut, you know, and then four new recruits would come in. So there were constant upgrades and churn, but there was a core of players there that lasted through the entire process. Yeah. And your brother, Danny, was one of those players, I believe, that went from the very beginning all the way to becoming a national champion at the very end. I think it was U19 level, if I'm not mistaken. So that's really the team that, and you talk about soccer roping you back in. I have my long soccer history as well. And I kind of said, no, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm dedicating myself to academics and studying and all that stuff and engineering. And then, I don't know, I went out to check out one of those games from Brian. And I'm like, oh, man, this... That's what he's doing. Jesus, this is
incredible.
Crazy. Huh? What is happening here? And that was like at the silver level, like it's still low level. And so I just started coming to more and more practice sessions and lending a hand wherever I could, you know, wherever he might have needed a little bit of a hand. But that's the team that hooked me. That's the team that I was always attending all the training sessions for. That's the team that I went to all the games for, so on and so forth. And so when he got your team, Benny, yeah, it wasn't like that. I still think that your team did very well, given its capabilities. And little by little, I kind of got hooked. It was kind of like the cute side project almost. I don't know. I did.
Well, think about it. If you're coming up to our sessions and offering a little advice to me, it's like, okay, you're a little bit bought into
this. Yeah, and you in particular, because you asked me, I've had chats with Brian during that process where I'm like, I like Benny a lot. He's slow as molasses, you know, because you were slow as hell. You were one of the slowest guys on the team, but you understood. And you had a soccer brain and you absorbed lessons and you executed lessons. And so you were essential to that team. Those are my core recollections. He's slow, but he knows how to play football. It's those two big things.
No, and you're right on the money because my whole soccer career, I was the fucking slowest kid on the team, right? I had the ideas, but I just couldn't execute at the speed that was needed, right?
Yeah.
But it's funny that you remember those little things too. And another thing that is like a crystal clear memory of me, I don't remember obviously every training session with Brian and right, all our games, but there's been one memory that stuck with me like forever. And it's just something so simple. It was like a training session, a little passing pattern, right? Somebody played me like a shit ball and it was bouncing. And I did like a clean ass first touch, like perfect pass back. And Brian's like, oh, Benny, incredible pass. But that moment just like stuck with me forever. And it's interesting how these little like moments as a coach, or you can impact a player like for the rest of their life, you know? And I think a lot of coaches, even myself as a coach now, I feel like I've had a lot of moments with my players because they've come back to me and, oh, coach, you remember this one time you told me this? And I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't remember that, but I'm glad it had an impact on you. But those little moments right there, those have stuck with me forever. And I think anybody that's played for Brian can probably come up with one time where it's like, fuck, you feel inspired or you feel like, damn, like I really want to do everything I can to please this guy, you know? That's just the type of energy that he brings.
Well, you're a coach now. So tell us, yep. you gave us all the history up to the moment where you turned coach. You haven't spoken about that. So when did you turn coach and what's that been like from the beginning to where you're at now?
Yeah, so as I said, right in London, I knew that when I came home that I wanted to get back in the game. And it just worked out that literally a week after I got home, I got a phone call from Mike Silzer, who was at that time the coach of Troy High School. And he had coached myself and both of my older brothers in Troy, so we were really close to them. He called me to let me know, like, hey, Benny, my daughter, she needs a team for her club team, CDA Slammers. At this point, I didn't have any experience coaching a team. I've coached clinics or camps and stuff like that, but I never had my own team, right? And so Mike Silzer, he gave me that chance, and that was my first team that I had. It was a girls' 2009 team. When I first took them over, they were about 7 years old. Now they're going to be sophomores in high school. So it's a little, it's pretty wild to see how fast they're growing and developing. That was my first club coaching experience. Around the same time as well, I also met the head coach of Fullerton College men's soccer. His name was Greg Avilis. And he happened to be friends with Danny as well. I think they coached together. But at that first Slammers meeting, when I met with Mike and everything, Greg happened to be there. And at that time, I was attending Fullerton Junior College. And I felt like I still had a little bit more that I could give as a player. And so I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to try out for the team in that spring season. Because the spring season is kind of the off season, right? So I joined the team. Greg let me in. I was way older than all the other guys. Played one spring season with them. Kind of like you said, Gary, I was fucking slow as molasses. I was out of shape. I had all the right ideas, right? But at the end of that semester, I met with Greg and I told him, hey, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity. I feel like it's time for me to hang up the boots, you know? And fuck Greg, like, yeah, you know, I agree. You weren't the right person. I want to bring you on the coaching staff. So that was back in 2018, and I had a chance as a young coach to coach college soccer. So for me, that was a huge impact on my career. And funny enough, Gary, that's how I ran into you, because we were celebrating a win. It was like a Friday. We had just won a game and we're like, let's go to Biggs. And sure enough, on the way out, I see you right there at the table. My other coaching experiences, I've been coaching at Troy High School for the past 6 years. Started off as the Froshtop coach and then JV for 4 years. And now this is going to be my first year coaching the varsity team. Coach Mike Silzer has just stepped down. And I can't thank him enough for everything he's done for me and all the opportunities. But yeah, so I'm really excited for this upcoming season. It's going to be very interesting. We have 15 seniors and not all of them are starters. So, you know, everybody wants playing time. The parents want playing time, right? But I'm really excited. It's a really fun group. So yeah, I've been coaching now, I guess you could say the past 10 years. And it's something that I do every single day, right? Whether yeah. it be going with my little kids or the high school girls or sometimes with the college guys, but it's something that I'm involved with every day. And
so you're at Cal State Fullerton right now. That's where you're recording from, or we're yes, recording sir. From. You just graduated. You got your degree, right?
Yes, sir. I just got my degree in human communications. It took me 10 years to get my bachelor's degree, but I was a little bit over the map. When I first started college, like I said, I was completely over soccer. I was done, right? Again, when you're not the best player and you're not getting offers for scholarships and this and that, you burn out a little bit, right? And I was still a fan of the game, but I knew that, like, you know what? Let me make my own path. So when I first started at Fullerton College, I was actually studying music production. I was trying to be the next Dr. Dre. And 2 years into it, I was like, you know what? Or that was the time when I started my study abroad, right? And so I went over there, came back. When I came back from my trip, I switched over to kinesiology. And so that was another about 2 years. And when I had met with my counselor at Fullerton College and we're talking about what's next for me, what am I planning to transfer with? She had mentioned to me, like, hey, Benny, just so you know, you could already have two associate's degree. And I had taken a communication class before and I really loved it. And so she told me, like, if you want right now, like, you're able to transfer to Cal State Fullerton. So that's what I did. I transferred to Cal State Fullerton as a communications major. And I'm really glad that I did it because I think it sets me apart a little bit from other coaches. A lot of coaches, they're going to go into kinesiology. They want to know about all the inner workings of the body and how it works and the movement. But I think as a coach to study communication, it's really beneficial because if you think about it, communication exists within everything that we do, whether it be communicating with the parents, the players, referees, right? And it's not just like A to B communication. You really have to, depending on who you're coaching, you have to kind of communicate in their style, right? To go from coaching 7-year-old boys to high school girls to college boys, every single one of them requires a different style of communication that you have to bring in. So that was one big thing that I took away from my education here at Cal State Fullerton is learning how to adapt, learning how people communicate, learning what makes people tick and this and that. So that's why I decided to study communication. And yeah, I think I'll take a year off after 10 years of continuous school, but I would love to pursue my master's degree eventually.
Interesting, interesting. I'm curious as to, because this is a discussion I have quite often, and a thought I have quite often over many, many years, the dichotomy between education and real world experience, you know?
Right.
Because they're two sides of the same coin in many respects. So what do you think about that? Because you've been coaching all this time and you've been having those sorts of written and verbal communications and nonverbal communications with players, parents of all walks of life for many years before you kind of got introduced to the formalism of right. the education. And I presume in communication classes or in marketing classes or whatever it is that you took, they say, oh, this form of communication is called the following. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a classification of things, and they kind of break down what it is that's actually happening. But do you really need to know those things to execute? You know what I mean? That's always an interesting thing to think about.
Well, I think the funny thing is all of us in our everyday communications, right? And just like you said, since I was a little kid, I've been communicating, talking to all these people, nonverbal, this and that. But I was doing that without having an understanding of actually what was going on, right? And I'll give you one example of theory we learned, right? It's called uncertainty reduction theory, right? As humans, we feel uncomfortable with uncertainty. And so we're going to do everything that we can in order to prepare and better ourselves in this situation so we're not feeling uncertain. For example, like before we met today, I was uncertain. I'm like, fuck, I don't, what are we going to talk about? This and that. Okay, let me do a little bit of research. Let me think about, or let me reflect on my past experience, right? And so all these little things that all of us as humans are communicating, we're doing these things without even kind of realizing. And having an understanding of how the human mind works and how our communication styles are, it's definitely beneficial. I would say that I could probably continue on the rest of my life without having known these theories. But I think understanding them and knowing about them allows you to understand how people operate, and it can allow you to be more successful in your conversations with them, whatever your goal is at the end of the conversation. I think the good thing about college is that, especially for employers, right? It shows that an individual can stick to responsibility, right? And complete a task at hand. So I think in terms of education, is it necessary? Do you need a degree? I'll be honest, Gary, I probably learned more life lessons and work experience working with you in all of our sessions, but I do think there is a value in education for sure. What are your thoughts as a professor? Because you have a different view of it.
Well, first off, you have the best of both worlds. Now you have the education and you have quite a bit of experience under your belt. So I think that is the best, right? If you can have both. I think it's case by case in many respects. So the way I view the world now is there are certain professions where you're kind of obligated to get the degree anyway, because you have to be licensed sure. for certain things. If you're a doctor or a lawyer or an architect, or, you know, there's a whole bunch of professions where they don't let you actually practice unless you have the piece of paper. So that's one right. avenue. So that's kind of off the table. That already forces you into an education. Then there's other professions that you really don't need it. When you look at the pro cons list, the biggest con is the cost. Yeah, so it costs a lot to go to college, and depending on what college you go to, obviously. But there's so many people saddled with enormous amounts of debt who, quote unquote, studied something that is useless for the most part, or relevant, which is, and forgive me, guys, but the vast majority of majors are precisely that.
You can say communication, right?
Well, if you think about it, there's a whole bunch of people that graduate from with communication degrees, a whole bunch of people. Yeah. And you think about how many jobs are available in the marketplace for communication? It's not that big. And what do they get paid? Also, it's not amazing, exceptions aside, of course. So you do that pro and con list and you're like, oh man, it's a tough decision. I don't know if I should do this. And then the most important thing that, for instance, that I talk to my students, because I have engineering students, science, all STEM, basically. What college does is it basically forces you, puts a gun to your head and says, you must do these assignments by this time to this degree of quality. And it kind of forces you to at least learn some things and do some stuff. Because the vast majority of folks, in my experience, don't have the self-motivation to do it on their own. They need to be forced. They need to be given a schedule. They need to be given an assignment. They need to be told what to do. And so that, in my opinion, for the vast majority, is the benefit of college. You're paying so that somebody is there, like a personal trainer, so that somebody is there forcing you to do the exercises. So that when you come out the other side, you actually have some sort of competence. Now, the exceptions are those who are more self-motivated and are deeply curious and are really passionate perhaps about a certain topic, let's say soccer or marketing or whatever, and they just go out into the world and start doing stuff on their own. And then they do stuff and learn stuff, whether it be, I care about robot, I'm going to build a robot. Ooh, that was cool. I'm going to build another one. Oh, you know what? I'm going to teach people how to build robots on YouTube. And you keep going down this path. Next thing you know, you have Tesla calling you up on the phone and you never even applied to them. Tesla's calling you. You didn't do anything. And they're like, hey, I see you've done all this artificial intelligence to control your robot using infrared radiation on a track or something. Can we talk to you? You know, we're interested in, maybe you can come work for us. So, and that's a person with no formal education, no college degrees, no nothing. So I don't know. I'll stop there because I could go on forever, as you can imagine. So I think that you've got it nailed, dude. You buckled down. You got your degree. You got some experience now. And hopefully, well, let's bring it back to 343, if you don't mind. Because I think, in my opinion, you tell me what you think. It's a confluence of all of it. It's like, hey, Benny, help us out running our social media account. Help us produce good videos that capture attention, that educate, that accomplish all these goals. And that's what a communications major is supposed to be good at, right? And it's in the field of soccer. So from our vantage point, we need somebody who knows the game and we need somebody with the non-soccer specific skill sets to execute.
For sure. Well, let me just say one more thing about my college experience, because I think it's important to note. I feel like if it weren't for my parents and wanting me so badly to get my degree, or at least one of the siblings to go and get the degree, and if it wasn't for that pressure, I feel like I probably, after a couple of years at junior college, I probably would have just dropped out and done my own thing. But I think by the time I was in the last couple of weeks of my undergrad and about to graduate, I really changed my perspective into not so much doing it for them, but I'm like, okay, fuck, like this is going to also benefit me as well. And that really, reflecting on that, kind of changed my perspective as to what it is I was doing, right? Because for many years at college, it was, I'm only here because my parents want me to be here.
Yeah.
And so think about in those years, I'm probably in class on my phone, not really caring, right? And think about how much information I missed or didn't absorb just because my attitude was like, oh, well, this isn't really for me, right? And so in that last semester, I'm like, you know what? Like, even if I am doing this for my parents, let me fucking put some effort into it and let's see what I can get out of it. At the end of the day, I think it will benefit me.
That's awesome what you just brought up. And I think it's a lesson more broadly spoken if we want to talk soccer, because this is a soccer podcast. Not really a soccer podcast. Yeah, we do soccer, but it's like I've shared with you so many times, I don't give a shit about soccer. Soccer is just an outlet, a proxy for these more deeper sort of social, political, economic, and cultural topic. Players are the same way, right? They need to be forced to do stuff. There are exceptions who love the game so much that they don't need to be forced to watch games, to practice on their own, to focus, to all the good stuff that we coaches dream of. Yeah, there are special players who do it, just you don't have to force them. But the vast majority, you have to force them. So I'm glad that you know, once you get older, you realize that you like you, right? You, sure. you got to the yeah. end line, you graduated, you look back, you're like, man, like my parents were wise and I was not wise when I was in my early 20s.
I hope that my brothers listen to this and they go and get their education too. They're right there.
They need, somebody's got to pressure them, dude. Cause there's all the, always these little motivational moments when you hear a podcast or you talk to somebody over a beer or something and you're pumped, you know, you hear a good story, you read a biography, you're pumped and you go out and that pump lasts maybe 2 or 3 days max. And then you're back to being yourself again. You need the constant pump.
For sure. And you know, what's funny, Gary, is the comment that you just said, right, about 3-4-3 and it's not all about soccer, right? I think in my first, I don't know, 10, 12 years of knowing you and knowing 3-4-3 and Brian and seeing everything, right? I always believed that it was just about the game on the field, on the grass, the 22 players on the field, the tactics, the way that you possess the ball. I never, until I started working with you on the side, I never could have imagined all the stuff that was going on behind the scenes or at the top, right? And being exposed to all that, it really opens your eyes and knowing that it's like you always say, it's more than just a game, right? It's way more politics. And you know what I mean? I had no idea, right? And I know you on your last podcast with Kurt, I think it was with Kurt, right? Yeah. You mentioned like when you were going to the Rose Bowl and watching the Galaxy and you were a fan, right? And you had no idea what was going on, right?
Yeah.
So for me, when I 5 years ago, when I started working with you and I'm editing these podcasts and I'm hearing, absorbing all this information, it's really eye-opening. And I think a lot of American soccer fans have no idea. Maybe they hear little snippets here and there, especially if you're really new to the game, you're only going to see the highlights or you're only going to see certain things. But I think if you're really deeply invested to the game, you're going to see it, what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, well, and look, it's fine. They're, you know, they're fans. And so sure. they're in it principally for the entertainment value. Oh, I just want to be entertained right now and escape everyday drudgery. So just NFL fans or Major League Baseball or whatever. It's a pastime. It's a pastime, which is different than, and this is something that I wish more folks would experience, is going overseas and talking, immersing themselves in the culture, let's say in Spain or Portugal or Holland or Switzerland or Austria or Argentina, Brazil or Uruguay, whatever. You go there and the fans aren't just fans for there for the entertainment.
Yeah.
It is what we just finished discussing. They are aware of the social, political, economic, cultural sort of underpinnings of it all. And they live those deeper human things through the game. That's their outlet for those deeper human things. So as fans or supporters or whatever, they will rise up in arms and fight for what their values are, you know, and their systems are. So it's not just the game for them. That is what's missing here in this country with what MLS has built, because those folks are in the United States, Benny, by the million. So just to end the thought, there are millions of those soccer-first cultures in the U.S., Mexicans, Mexican-Americans, Latinos, Europeans, you name it, they're here, but they aren't the demographic that is watching MLS or cares about MLS. They're not involved. They're not involved. The people that are involved with Major League Soccer and American soccer, generally speaking, is the culture that just looks at it as an entertainment product. And that's why we are where we are. So, but anyway, I digress. You were pulling on a thread there.
No, for sure. And I actually had a really good opportunity to see that firsthand in Europe when I went to the Roma game. So it was Roma versus Lazio at the Roma's home field. And this was back in 2016. And I think at the time, the league had just like enforced a new rule about how many fans could be in their supporters or something like that, right? And so when I went to the game, half of the fans in the stadium were on strike because they were pissed at the club or whatever, this and that. But even with Gary, I'm not kidding you, like 25% of the stadium pool, it was still the most insane environment that I had ever seen, like way surpassed than what LAFC brings. And this is with 25% of their fans there. You know what I'm saying? So it just goes to show you, like, it really is their life. And the fact that 75% of the fans were willing to miss their team's derby because they want change, that just goes to show you they're on a different level out there, right?
No, it's cool that it's starting to happen little by little in this country, because I think even the non-soccer first households are becoming more and more educated in the country. And you can see that with several examples that are have happened in sequence. The first most recent example is when the supporter groups kind of rebelled against the LA Galaxy and the LA Galaxy management, and they forced LA Galaxy management, whenever it was, 1 year ago or something on that order, to be removed. And they won. They got what they wanted. And now look, the Galaxy is doing better than they've done the past 6, 7, 8 years under previous management. So that's one example. And the lesson learned there, hopefully, by the Galaxy supporter groups and everybody who was looking at it from afar is like, oh, wow, the people have power. Because this whole time for the history of the league, 25, 26 years, whatever it is, the people have been convinced, this particular demographic has been convinced that they have no voice, that they have no power, that they can't really force change. And that's not true, Benny. The next example just happened, right? The fans are the ones that got Greg Berhalter fired. It was the fans. It was not the federation. It was the fan who forced that to happen. And then the last little thing before you jump in is, now it looks like there's several supporter groups from different franchises, MLS franchises, who are coming out with statements that they're going to boycott this new Mexican MLS tournament, League's Cup, in protest of it having impacted the Open Cup, of MLS attacking the Open Cup. So great. They're coming around, still a long way to go. They still don't really have an appreciation for how deep all of this goes, how bad it is. But, you know, I think that's part of our mission, right, Benny? And part of, you know, why I wanted you so badly to be part of this team, because we need help in helping this process accelerate more.
So obviously a lot of the talk recently in Twitter and U.S. soccer media is where everybody's kind of focused on who's going to be the next coach. But let's look long-term, like past the 2020 World Cup. How can youth coaches today, for example, who are working with 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, what can they do to propel change in this country, right? Because I think Brian, when he first started with OSC Rage and TFA Chivas, he really changed the landscape of this country. And I think a lot of people have tried to not copy his work, but they've tried to replicate what he's done and haven't been as successful. There have been a lot of coaches that have taken, you know, great information from him and applied it. And but what can coaches now, like tonight, tomorrow, what can we do to help propel that change? Because it feels like we're a very small, like little pog in the machine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think everybody has an opportunity to change the game.
Yeah.
Right.
There's many avenues. You know, when you mentioned Brian is basically, from my perspective, like a hyper-focused spear, in the sense that, whatever, he's my brother, whatever, but he's such an expert or master at the craft of coaching at all the levels that he's touched to this point, that he's able to use that instrument and really make a lot of noise, right, with it. It's like, look at what can be accomplished with this degree of dedication and understanding. And with that, that stimulates the ecosystem and environment, because now all of a sudden the lesson that was learned, from my perspective, is like, look at what's possible. Up until Brian, I'll just stick with Brian, because there were other influences like Caleb Porter that I've given a lot of credit to at the college level, and then Tata Martino, when Tata Martino came to MLS. And up until then, we were always lied to, Benny, growing up, that what Brian was doing was impossible. They would say, you can't be like, you know, the European kids here in the U.S. It's not possible.
Who would say that? The people at the top or coach, club directors?
Well, that was, since that was the prevailing narrative, that was the conventional wisdom, then yeah, obviously it has to come from the top. Because if it's conventional wisdom, then that means that stories are written about precisely that. So all the stories that were ever written are surrounding that. And so the media would talk to people higher up, or the highest level youth coaches, or the highest level youth national team coaches, or the highest level college, or the highest level MLS, or the highest level national team people. And all of those people would tell the media, whoa, don't look at us, don't blame us. What you guys are thinking about is impossible. You can't do this in America. In America, soccer is not important. In America, it's like the fifth or sixth or seventh most important sport. We don't have the athletes. We don't have the infrastructure. We don't have anything. So what you guys would like us to be is impossible. So it comes from there, Benny. And then Brian comes along and says, you're all full of shit. That's not true. Take a look. So that drove a lot of change on top of so many other things that happened that you know that we won't necessarily get into here. But so that's one modality. Be so fucking awesome that you can't be ignored, and then you're like a beacon. But it doesn't have to be that way. It could be the following way, which is very powerful. Every coach, if they do awesome work in their own environment and educate the players and the parents that they have, educate them on all of these things that we're talking about, of how the ecosystem works, what it's like, you know, why is it not great here in America? What's holding us up? Imagine if every single coach across the country educated the 40 players and parents that they have under their tutelage. Whoa. That's massive change that occurs in the short term, in the medium term, and especially in the long term, because you just finished talking about how one coach can impact your life so much. Imagine if the 40 people that you teach these things to in your environment then grow up and they now have the money to allocate to what they want or whatever, or they become coaches or whatever it is. And they tell their people, you know, the stories of how all this whole machine worked. So that is first and foremost, I think, the most impactful thing that youth coaches can do, aside from the soccer itself. You know, try to play good soccer, educate yourself in what works at this level, which obviously I'm going to recommend learning from Brian, but then educate.
Maybe you can touch a little too, because I think a lot of coaches, especially if maybe you haven't heard of 343 or this is your first like experience with 343. For me, when I first started working with you, right, obviously I've had access to the coaching course, and it's literally as a coach been life changing, because there's nothing else like it. There's nowhere else where you see the actual practitioner in the environment leading the session, right? For me, it's inspiring, but maybe you can touch a little bit on the coaching course for coaches or even the masterclass for parents, because I think it's such a powerful tool of education that could benefit so many coaches.
I'm supposed to be interviewing you, dude, but okay.
Well, I think it's important.
Yeah, no. Okay, I'll say just a couple of words. So early in the podcast, we've been talking about Brian and Brian's work, so on and so forth. So I think there's not much more to be said aside from, hey, yeah, there is this. Look, we uploaded our first ever YouTube video in 2012 of Brian's U11 team playing soccer, okay? And the video went viral. It got over 1 million views. The papers in Europe picked up on the video and they started writing articles saying, oh, wow, look, the Americans actually know how to play soccer now. Or, you know, it just exploded. And I was getting a whole bunch of emails and people reaching out to me saying, hey, Gary, how is this even possible? Teach us. And I was like, how am I going to teach you to be Brian? That's impossible. You can't teach somebody to be Brian. He's one of a kind. But, you know, the wheels started turning in my head and like, okay, well, what if we filmed it professionally from Elevation, you know, with one of these HiPods, and HiPod had just was a new company. Nobody was really using them. We were one of their first customers almost. What if I get one of those? What if I mic Brian up? You know, what if we start filming all the training sessions? And obviously it's not scripted in any sort of way for the camera. Yeah, this is the art. This is him in action.
Well, that's why I love it, because it feels real.
It is. Well, because it is real. It's real. There is nothing, oh, what should we film today for customers? It has nothing to do with that. It's like, well, you're training Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Great. I'm out there with the camera Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, mic'd up, capture everything. Oh, game this weekend. Great. Then we film the game, halftime speech, pregame, postgame, you name it. And you capture all the real art at that point. And then it's a matter of organizing it in a way. And I'm a teacher, obviously. I've been teaching at Cal State Fullerton for a very long time. I teach physics. I know maybe a thing or two about how to structure a program. And yeah, that's what we did, man. So now you can actually learn from Brian himself, the practitioner himself in the real environment. That's for coaches. And then the master class is for parents, because they need help too, right? Parents have a whole host of challenges in front of them. I'm not going to list them out. They know what those actually are. You know what those actually are. And so the best thing to do, I think, for parents is to give them an awesome soccer education as well, because if they are very well educated in the sport and many of the behind the scenes of the sport, and also what it is that their kids should be working on outside of the organized training environment, if they know those key elements at a deep level, then guess what? They'll be able to tackle the more case-by-case questions that come their way. Should my kid be on this team or some other team? Should my kid be training this or training that? They have all these scenarios. And over the course of the years, I get all these questions via email. And every single time I read one of these questions, I'm like, well, Kelly, I'm sorry, like, no idea what I should be recommending to you. And I have no context. I have no context. You told me a 12-year-old son is playing on this team or this level. What should I do? There's this MLS next team that, you know, is kind of interested, but not really. And then there's the ECNL team, which is high on them, but our coach is freaking awesome. You know, there's all these things and you don't know because you're not there. It's impossible. It's impossible. So the solution is give them an awesome soccer education so they can make educated decisions themselves for their kids as best as possible. For the most part, Benny, I don't know if you agree with this from your experience, they're all flying blind. The only ones who have a chance, generally speaking, are the ones who were maybe former professional players themselves, the parents, former pros or former high-level players themselves who kind of went through all of this through their childhood and had a time to reflect. They're better able to guide their kid than those who don't have those experiences. But even them, they many times are in trouble also because they have a sample of one. They only had one experience, their own experience. And from our vantage point as coaches, we've seen the trajectories of hundreds and hundreds or thousands of players from 9 to being pro or not pro or college or dropout or whatever it happens to be. So you have so many data points at this point, plus you're a practitioner in the space. You actually work in the space. You know, you're not a doctor who's working 60 hours a week and then, you know, you try to figure out what to do with your kid's soccer, right? We actually work in the space. So that's the masterclass, Ben. We're doing our best.
Love it. In my experience, Gary, I feel like you're right. Majority, 99% of the parents are flying blind. There's a small percentage of parents who have had older kids already gone through an entire cycle. Maybe they've had 2 or 3, right? And so by the time they're at their 4th kid, it's like, okay, I kind of understand a little bit what's going on here. So I think those parents, and funny enough, those kids, like the younger ones, they actually end up succeeding more because the parents stay out of the way a little bit more and are more trusting of the coach or the environment because by this time they already know what to expect and what they want to get out of it. So I think those parents, not to say that they know everything, right? But they are a little bit more educated on it.
No question. And it depends on the levels too, because maybe a kid graduates level and the parent, that's the first time a kid has gone to that new level and the parent is now a newbie at that new level. And it just to emphasize the point, it doesn't have to be like college, but once a kid graduates, say college and starts playing D1 college, well, the previous 2 or 3 kids didn't do that. And so the parent, again, is flying blind, has no idea, you know, what to do.
You know, Gary, one of my biggest regrets is not putting in more work, like in terms of when I was in high school, because I feel that any kid that has started playing club soccer since they were maybe 8 to 10 years old, right? By the time they get to high school, if they've been consistently playing, I think there's an opportunity for them to get a scholarship. And it doesn't have to be a D1. It could be D2, D3, NAIA, right? And that's one of my biggest regrets is not putting in more work and effort and preparing myself to go and try out for a team. You know what I mean? Because I think it, again, we talked about what's the biggest con of education? The price. It's expensive, right? But I think for those kids and a lot of kids in high school, their mentality is, oh, I'm only going to play if I go D1, right? But I don't think that's the right mentality to have. I think go play at a D2 or a D3 or NAIA, get the college experience and enjoy your experience. I think a lot of kids are missing the big picture of like, oh, if I'm not going D1, I'm never going to make it pro, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've been out of the loop on the college thing for a while now because obviously we're doing something else at the pro level. Yeah. But I see a lot of what you're saying on social media, you know, from coaches or DOCs making comments. That seems to be the culture. Is that the culture now? Is the kids are really like, oh, if I don't go D1, I screw it?
It's really sad, Gary. And I've worked with players that have had opportunities to go and play D2 or D3, and they're just not down. They're like, man, I'm too good for that. It's sad, honestly.
It's an ego thing, you think? Or is it because they want to go to a particular school?
It's not even about going to a particular school. It's the pedigree of playing at a D1 college. You know what I'm saying? And for them, I don't know if it's like an image thing or where they want to be perceived as the best, or I don't know what it is. The crazy thing, Gary, is especially in California now, there's this new law. You can go to a two-year college for free, right? And play 2 years at a junior college. And a lot of Division IIs and Division I, they recruit from junior colleges, right? So for a senior that's graduating high school to say like, oh, I didn't get a scholarship to D1, my career is over. That's the softest mentality that you can have. Go and grind it out at a two-year for 2 years. In my 4 or 5 years that I was at Fullerton College, we maybe had about 7 or 8 players transfer out to a D1 or a D2. And even more to NAIAs and D3s like that on full rights too. You know what I'm saying? So if you want it, the potential is there. But you have to set your priorities and you have to think about, okay, what is it that I want? Am I okay with not playing at a D1? And the thing is too, some players who do get a D1 scholarship, they get there and they think, oh, in high school, I was the best. I'm going to fucking kill it. When they get there, they're riding the bench.
Yeah.
All 4 years, you know, they never see the.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you got to think about what you really want and where you're at.
This is interesting. Two thoughts. One, a question. Are parents not trying to convince their kid to have a different perspective, or are parents also, do they also have that perspective? Ah, if my kid doesn't go D1, then screw it. Are parents in the loop in this situation?
Yeah, I think it's case by case basis. And a lot of the times you would see at the junior college level, a lot of the kids that we're getting don't have good relationships with their parents, meaning they're distant from them or they don't talk to them at all. Or you know what I'm saying? A lot of them come from family homes like that. And so by the time they get to college, they're pretty much on their own to make their decisions themselves. Mm. And so for us at Fullerton College, that was a big thing for us. We want you to transfer out of here on a scholarship. And so we were the ones telling them like, hey, stick it out, grind it out. Even if you're a redshirt and you don't make it your first year, keep working, keep training, right? Because they don't have other influences like that helping them out. Now, some of them, of course, they do have parents that are holding their hands their whole way and right, they're at every single game or they're calling their coach. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's those type of parents as well. And it seems to be the case that usually those kids are always going on to transfer out. Even if they don't play at the next level, they're still going to continue on with their education, right? Because their parents are pushing them in that direction.
Got it. Interesting. And the other thought I had was, because when I cared about college, which was those early days when you were playing youth club soccer and when your older brothers were playing youth club soccer, because that was really the pipeline back then. This was prior to 2007 when the Development Academy got launched, U.S. Soccer Development Academy, and things started getting more and more professionalized. The path was you go to D1 and then you get drafted. That was the pro pipeline back in those days. But the other thing that's important is back in those days, we didn't have Instagram. We didn't have Twitter. We didn't have TikTok. We didn't have the perversion in many cases of social media. And so I'm curious if it actually is an ego thing. You know, and they want their public image on social media to not be tarnished somehow. Oh, I'm going to SOCA, you know, which is a D3 school or something. And their friends or whatever are going to be like, what? What's going on there? I thought you were good at soccer. You know what I mean? Like, hey, is that what it is?
It's funny because especially kids these days, their friends will rip on if you're going to SOCA. What the fuck? The worst school ever. And obviously joking, right?
But yeah. But is that what it is? They would rather just not play than have that sort of stigma attached to them.
I mean, I'm sure it's not every kid, but I know a lot of kids like that.
So
there
crazy.
Are a lot of them that are just so concerned about their image or this and that. I feel like in the year that, so I was born in 1996. I feel like I barely made the cutoff between a healthy balance of technology and the real world.
Yeah.
Right. I think anybody born after 2000, they already have a tablet in their hand by the time they're 3 or 4. Right. For me, I didn't have a phone until like my freshman year of high school. And like, I didn't have, or I can remember like in second grade, like learning the freaking typing exercise, but like with the floppy disk. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of kids these days don't even know what that is. So I think anybody born after 2000, yeah. Technology since the minute they were born, right? And I think growing up like that, you see, okay, this is my life, right? I'm going to post it on Instagram. I want to have the best cars, the best clothes. I want to go to the best schools. So a lot of them, I mean, think about it. It's been their whole life like that. And they're observing their parents do it, their friends. And that's another thing too, Gary. I think a lot of these kids with so much potential and talent, it goes to waste because what are they doing majority of the day? They're on Instagram or they're on TikTok or playing Fortnite or whatever it is. Versus like, okay, back in the day when you didn't have those luxuries, what would you do? You'd go outside and train or juggle or play with your friends or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I feel like I was lucky to be born when I was born because it was a healthy balance of.
Yeah. Well, it's hilarious because you're 28 years old only and you sound like an old man. Oh, back in my day, I'm supposed to be the one doing that, you know? Oh, man. But it's interesting because you have real world experience as a coach now and you see the impact that those things are having on the next generation, which is weird, man. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. All I know is that it's not good if you want to be the best that you can be at something, especially in soccer. I've observed it almost like a direct correlation. The ones that care more about Instagram are usually the ones that don't reach as high of a level. The ones who actually care about how they're perceived don't reach as high of a level anymore. The ones who are constantly comparing themselves to others don't reach a higher level. It's weird, man. They can't focus on themselves. Just focus on yourself, man. Who cares what?
Yeah.
What other people are doing, who cares what the level of where other players are at, where you're not. Dude, that's going to be going up and down all the time. 1 week or 1 month or 1 year, you're going to be on cloud nine. Everybody's going to be talking about you and somebody else they're going to ignore. And then the following year, it could be completely inverted. And all of a sudden you're saying, hey, what is this all about? It messes with your mind, Benny.
No, and it's a good point, Gary, because a lot of the youth, especially in terms of with social media use and all this stuff, everybody's always comparing themselves to their peers or their friends, right? Oh, let's say, for example, my best friend, he just got a Division I scholarship. He's straight A's. Okay, why didn't I get the scholarship? Or why am I not in the same place as that? And then it starts to fuck with your mind, right? Oh, shit, I'm behind or this and that. But I think you have to realize everybody's on their own path and it's going to take different times for different people. I want to hear your thoughts, Gary, on, because it's so interesting to me. I feel like in the current moment that we're in right now, we have so much information at our disposal. Literally, we can research anything we want. We can learn anything we want. And yet it feels like we're like not learning so much versus back in the day when they didn't have all this technology at their hands. Okay, what do? You go to the library, you fucking spend hours reading, researching, right? So do you think it's information overload, like we have too much at our disposal? Or what do you think it is? Do you think it's like a mental thing where it's just a laziness, we don't want to research? Or what do you think it is?
I think to first order, since everything is just a click away, it's easy to get distracted. And it's easy to give up on the hard work that's required to go deep in a particular subject matter or build a product or build a service or be successful at anything. You have to go pretty deep. And that's hard. Benny, it's really hard. It's really, really hard because there are days, weeks, months, sometimes years where it feels like you're not making significant progress or you're not reaching where you want to reach. And then you start looking at other areas. Ooh, well, that looks interesting over there. Or, ooh, that looks interesting over there. So you start allocating more of your bandwidth in these other areas and you get that boost of dopamine because if you go to something brand new, it's easy to learn something that you didn't know before, or easy to make progress. It feels like you're making progress. For instance, hey, Benny, I want you to go and learn a little bit about large language models. You know, please, you know, do that today. And you go and you type in large language model and you're like, oh man, this is crazy. And you're getting stimulated, you know? Or Benny, go and research, you know, anything. I don't know. How do they put the fizz in Coca-Cola or something? You're like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And you're wasting all this time and you're getting the dopamine hit because you're learning something new and you're neglecting the hard work of how do I change this one sentence to be more persuasive? That one thing might take an entire day and it feels like you're not making progress. I think that's what it is. Just constant distractions, dude.
For me personally, I'll even say like, I don't feel like I've mastered one thing in my life yet. I feel like I'm really good at a lot of little things, but there's been yet to be that one thing that I'm a master at. And I think that's the hard part is finding what really sparks you or gets you up in the morning to go after.
But that's hard. See, let me interrupt because I think in large part, it's a myth when folks say, oh, you got to find your passion because that's what's going to get you up and get you going and get you consistent. I I don't think that's generally true, man. I think you have to force yourself no matter where you're at. You just have to force yourself. And when you force yourself and you sit there and you start working, eventually you get into a zone, you get into a flow, and then you're feeling all those good feelings of you're learning, you're making progress, you're not a piece of crap at the end of the day. And if you do that consistently, that is ultimately how you get good at something. And then when you get really good at something, then, again, generally speaking, my opinion, then it kind of becomes your passion because you're good at it.
Not my rebuttal, but my question to you, it's if you're not passionate about it to start with it, right? How do you start, right? Let's say, for example, you tell me, Benny, go learn about this script thing, right? And I have no interest or passion. How do you flip that switch and say, all right, this is what I want to become a master at? If it's not something that sparks your curiosity.
Well, how did you get interested in anything in the first place? Do you have a passion, Benny? I don't know. I don't know if you do. Do you?
I mean, I have a lot of things that I'm passionate about.
Really? Okay.
Well, what are you passionate about,
Greg? Well, I don't know that I have a passion.
I think you do, but you just haven't labeled it yet. Because think about it, your mission that you've been on for the past 15 years, you're obviously passionate for some reason, right? You're not just doing it for no reason.
Well,
Or maybe, like you said, you've been working at it so long that now, like, it is your passion.
See, I just don't, man, that passion word just doesn't fit. I don't know, man. I think there are moments of passion. So when a conversation is stimulating, for instance, I might get really animated because it conjures up things inside of me. So passion comes out. But I wouldn't sit there, you know, wake up in the morning, wake up and like, oh, man, I'm so passionate about soccer. I could give two shits. Or, oh man, I'm so passionate about these large language models. Or, oh man, I'm so passionate about this AI that I'm developing. Or, oh man, I'm so passionate about physics. You know, it doesn't happen. It happens in moments or in spurt here or there. And I think it happens when you're in some sort of flow, right? Is when that word passion is applicable.
Makes sense.
I don't know, Benny. This is a complicated subject, but I do think that the more you work at something and the better you get at it, then the more of those moments you're going to have. And I think it's all connected with the comparing yourself to others sometimes in many respects, because if you're really good at something and you look around, you feel some sort of sense of pride or fulfillment or ego or something like, oh, I'm really good at cleaning the dishes. Now I'm a badass, you know, I have this whole efficient method worked out. It feels good when you're good at it. So I don't know, Benny, I have no idea.
Maybe it's that too, it's that desire to feel valued or feel part of something.
Yeah, but it doesn't depend on somebody else though, because as I was saying, if you're in flow, then those are great moments. When the rest of the world kind of melts away and you're in the zone, that's awesome. That is way more awesome than looking to your left or looking to the right and saying, I'm better at this thing than you are, or I'm, you know what I mean? Like the comparison thing with others doesn't even, it's not even close right to the awesome feeling of being in flow.
How do you find your flow, or what gets you in your flow?
You have to force yourself to sit down and get to work.
No, I'm saying you personally, like what moments or experiences do you feel like you're in flow? Like, fuck, this is incredible. You know what I'm saying? Is it when you're teaching? Is it when you're doing a podcast?
It could be anything. It could be when I'm doing a podcast with you. Yeah, things melt away and then I'm in flow. Or it could be I sit down to work on this AI generative model, and after 2 hours, something happens in my brain where I'm like flowing, and you just keep going. Like last night, I was up till 2:30 in the morning. I just kept going and going and going and going, and I didn't want to stop. And I had planned to cook a tri-tip roast. I had planned to do all these other things, and I just blew it all off because I didn't want to interrupt the work. And I think that happens a lot to folks in sports too, because I don't know about you, when you're playing soccer, when I was playing soccer, the entire world would melt away if I was having issues with a girl at home or homework or exams the next day or whatever was pressuring me melted away when I was in the game. All right, Ben, I don't know. This was supposed to be an introduction to Benny Rogers, and it was an interview of Gary Cliven by Benny Rogers. Why don't you tell folks a little bit about what you're doing with 343?
Yeah, so initially when I first met up with you and we talked about what the future looks like for 343, the first thing that really sparked my interest and made me feel like I was in flow, right? It was that first YouTube series that I did with Brian about 3 years ago. So I think we started with the U20s, USMNT cycle, right? I think we probably did over 30 to 40 episodes, if I'm not mistaken, 3 seasons. So that was an amazing experience. I honestly felt so lucky to be in the room and hearing it firsthand from Brian. And usually we do about like 4 or 5 takes and every take was different and I'd get to hear new things, but being able to crop together his best moments and edit those videos and put them together and push it out to the American soccer fan base, and not just the American soccer, but I think people globally are watching this. For me, it's such a rewarding experience. And more recently, I've been helping you, Gary, with editing the podcast, social media work in terms of Instagram. So anything that you see on Instagram has been me. And another thing that I've done for 343 is helping with highlight clips and players. And for me, honestly, that's been the most exciting and rewarding for me because I feel like it may be like a small piece in their journey, but it's been critical for them and it's helped, I think, a lot of kids. And so I just feel so grateful and honestly blessed that you've entrusted me with all this because, you know, there's a lot of sensitive information and
it's interesting. At some point we should do a whole episode on sensitive information. What is sensitive information? What is not sensitive information? We should do a whole episode on that because I think everybody has an appreciation for what that means at all the levels, every single level, people have an appreciation for that. We should also do an episode, I think, on the video work that you did for players like highlight reels, because there's a lot of thought that goes into that depending on the objectives that are supposed to be fulfilled with a highlight reel and who the audience is, as you well know, right? Because you went through a whole bunch of different iterations and working in conjunction with us as to what is a good clip, what is not a good clip, why is that good, why is this not good. Sometimes people think, oh, that's awesome. And if I'm looking at it, I'm like, that, get that shit out of there immediately. That's terrible, you know, or vice versa. A person might see a clip and be like, oh yeah, don't include that. And I'm like, what are you talking about? That is the clip. That's the one, you know? So it's really,
that's the clip that gets signed, right?
Yeah. It's really interesting. It's really interesting. All the stuff that goes on there. And then the other thing is, yeah, let me, so you posted an Instagram last night where it's a clip of me, you know, talking with Kirk and I'm going off on the media as I usually do. And, you know, the caption was really rough, you know, about the media. And I'm like, ooh, you know, I think I want to share this with you and everybody. It's like, let me be the bad guy. You know what I mean? Like, right. You keep it neutral, keep it nice, keep it clean, keep it rated G.
Yeah, I went hard.
Yeah, keep it Disneyland friendly, you know what I'm saying? And let me be the bad guy behind the scenes.
Because no, honestly, Gary, you know me, that's not me, you know? And it would be fucking fake of me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a villain or I'm not the type to ruffle feathers or fucking call people out. You know what I'm saying?
No, yeah, totally, dude. Totally. Fucking, and that's part of my passion, if you will.
It's
like, it just comes out when I see something that's straight up, this is the truth, I have to say, and I have to say in a very passionate way. So you just do the rated G stuff and I'll do the rated X stuff. All right, dude. Any parting remarks here?
No, I'm just super grateful to be part of the mission. And I hope that I can, you know, continue to educate people. And I feel like I'm being educated myself and being around you and absorbing, you know, your thoughts and all your opinions. And it's a good feeling to know that I have a little bit of power, you could kind of say, to spread out that message to people, because I think it's really important. And if any change is going to happen in this country, then it starts with us and all the fans and everybody that's involved and part of the 343 mission too. We need more people on board. You know, there's a huge percentage of people that probably still haven't heard of 343. And I think slowly but surely, they're coming around to it and it's going to be a revolution, G.
Yeah, for sure, man. Anybody listening out there who wants to be an intern and maybe do some stuff for us, reach out, you know, college credit, whatever. We don't have the budget, you know, for you. So it's not like I'm offering you a job, but maybe a little bit of an experience here or there, you know, feel free to reach out too. All right, Ben, guess what? You're editing this one, dude.
100%. I already knew it.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.